Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The last time guitarist Nathan Salzberg was on the show, he was here to play songs from his album Affirmed. But today we've invited him back to wear another hat, that of folk music archivist. See, Nathan's day job is with the Alan Lomax Archive, and a few years ago, he stumbled on what might be his biggest find yet as an archivist. Piles and piles of early 20th century 78 RPM records. Some of them have been collected into a set called Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard. Hard Time, Good Time, and End Time Music, 1923 to 1936. Nathan's on the line with us from Portland, Maine, and Nathan, that is a hell of a title.
Thanks very much. Yeah, you made your way through it pretty well. That title's been on my mind, actually, for a number of years. It just seemed, you know, it's a little cute, but I felt like it was would be potentially a really great set to put together of kind of tracing the life cycle of the rural Americans that made some of my favorite music, certainly country music. And my initial idea for the thing would be to draw from the collections at the American Folklife Center, the Library of Congress in D.C., but there's just so much stuff there. They say there are 120 years of 40-hour weeks worth of listening. I just sort of hung it up, and there it stayed until we discovered these records in my hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, and set this set a-rolling.
All right, now take us back to March 2010 in Louisville and stumbling onto this audio goldmine.
So the short story is that a friend of a friend of a friend in Louisville runs a dumpster company and basically brought a few boxes of 78s home that were on their way to the dumpster. And my friend, a fellow named Joe, saw the records, called me up, and said, there are some records here that might be to your taste. And, you know, it's old-timey stuff, which can really mean anything. It can mean Bing Crosby. It can mean Harry James. But I went to look at the records anyhow, and right away I knew it was a pretty serious collection. Some of the big names in country music for sure, Uncle Dave Makin, Jimmy Rogers, the Carter Family, but then some names that you don't see very often at all when you're digging for 78s. People like Alfred Carnes, who was a great singing evangelist from outside of Corbin, Kentucky.
I have heard of a land on a faraway strand. Tis a beautiful home of the soul, built by Jesus on high, there we never shall die. Tis a land where we'll never grow.
A Mississippi John Hurt record, which is not representative of the collection because it's blues and this is 98% hillbilly, as they called it. But the John Hurt record just sent shivers down my spine. And we jumped in two cars and ran over to this dumpster on the other side of town and basically emptied it out. And that was only a quarter of the records. The next day, I called the dumpster boss first thing in the morning, went back over to the house and cleaned out the rest. And all told, there were about 2,878s.
2,800. And they belonged to a guy named Don Wall, who seems to have been, not really much other way to put this, a hoarder.
Indeed. We have called him a collector. I call him a collector. But there's no real evidence that he played these records.
Yeah.
Some of the records, he got them in. He was collecting between about 56 and the mid-60s, and then he started collecting LPs. Most of the LPs in his collection were sealed, and most of the 78s, they were in no kind of order whatsoever. There was no, I mean, certainly from an archival perspective, there was no finding aid, there was no organization, no rhyme or reason to his collecting. And there were a number of records that were still in their original mailers from the late 50s. Things were moldy as could be, things were falling apart, the place was an absolute shambles, but he kept them, and they stayed in his house until he died, and his family apparently were estranged from him, and they directed the records to be thrown away.
So when you have records that are in that kind of shape, I mean, you write in the liner notes to this set about, you know, picking things up and they're falling apart in your hand because they're so covered with mold and stuff. Are these old 78s durable enough that you could salvage a lot of them?
We salvaged most of them, absolutely. I mean, the fact is, the 78s are really brittle if you drop them, but if you just lay them flat on, say, you know, a record cleaner, which has a turntable built in, you can scrub to your heart's content until the mold comes off, which is really, really satisfying work. So we did basically all of the records. You know, some were broken in their boxes, but by and large, they've all been salvaged.
We're speaking with Nathan Salzberg. He's an archivist at the Alan Lomax Archive and a guitarist and composer. But with us talking about this this treasure of old 78s, you said 98% what people call hillbilly, early country, basically, is what we're talking about, right? Rural music of the Great Depression and the decade before?
That's right.
And so this set, Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard, focuses on the time 1923 to 1936, and it is, as the title indicates, broken up into three sections. Let's talk about Work Hard first. Work songs, man, this is a long, long tradition in American music, in European music. We don't really hear a whole lot of work songs anymore, do we?
Certainly not. Usually the songs that we hear now are things to take our minds off work. I mean, music that's made purely for entertainment purposes, which is not to say these records were not made for entertainment purposes. But in country music, you know, people wore their occupations on their sleeves. They were truck drivers, or they were railroad section men, or they were longshoremen. And of course, this works in both black and white music. But I think, you know, in country music, there's always been a great tradition of wearing your blue-collar roots.
Well, and trains are a kind of an enduring icon in American mythology and American music. And you have this song from 1930 by Red Gay and Jack Wellman called Flat Wheel Train Blues Part 2, which is like this amazing bit of musical onomatopoeia where the band is imitating the sounds of a train. We'll hear the sound of a mule braying.
This was one of those rare records that is, in fact, really rare, and also one that I had never heard before. It's never been reissued before in any LP or CD, and I'd never heard it. I put it on, and it was unlike anything I'd ever heard before, and I write this in the notes, that most of pre-war records, both black and white, that you hear doing train imitations, they're usually blown on harmonicas, but I've never heard one that actually is a train imitated by fiddle and guitar. So the thing was a novelty in itself musically, but then there's parts of it that I just find deeply affecting and melancholy, one of which is this bit with the mule.
This is Red Gay and Jack Wellman, the Flat Wheel Train Blues Part 2.
That's an awful steep hill ahead of us, but ain't plenty of fire, son. Turn it down.
Well, I got plenty of steam, brother. Boy, this is some hill. Think you can make it?
I got it wide open.
See that old mule stand down there by the side of the track?
And every time we come by, this mule tries to outrun us. Too like that if you was to get left. Come on, let's make it up this hill.
That is Red Gay and Jack Wellman with the Flat Wheel Train Blues, Part 2, from 1930, recorded in November of that year in Atlanta, and now appearing on the set Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard. Hard Time, Good Time, and End Time Music, 1923 to 1936, put together from this collection that my guest Nathan Salzberg found in and near, in a dumpster near, a home of a collector named Don Wall. So just to recap, Nathan, you had the idea for this set for a couple of years, and the sheer volume of stuff that was out there kind of kept you from pursuing the idea until this one distinct personal collection appeared in your life, right?
Exactly. And that's well said. I mean, I think that's the idea behind the set. Another element to the set, past sort of the topical, the thematic arrangement, for me was here was an opportunity to sort of memorialize this fellow that by all accounts had no friends, again, had an estranged family, and sort of erect a monument to his, I don't know, collecting tenacity or the extent of his hoarderness.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, you know, for someone who's left no trace and almost left no trace at all, if his entire, you know, life's work collecting this stuff was in fact tossed out, I felt like the set was the best way to sort of give, you know, give tribute to Don Wall.
And to people like him, because there are lots of other people out there who are, you know, genuine collectors and whose collections have made it possible for us to occasionally find these little gems. I mean, you mentioned that Red Gay and Jack Wellman song was something you were unaware of before this, right?
Absolutely. And there are records being discovered, not all the time, but, you know, every couple of years, one record that has been previously thought to have been lost to history turns up. There was a recent Blind Blake record, the last of the Blind Blake records that no one had ever heard, recently turned up at a flea market in Virginia just a few months ago. So they're still out there is the unspoken message here.
Play Hard is the second part of this three-part set. We're talking about 1923 to 1936, especially the second half of that time period. Not a carefree time, not a time we think of as very playful. Where do these songs, what kind of tradition do they come from?
Some of the music, you know, in the 30s, between 31 and 36, these records became rarer and rarer because the labels themselves were making fewer of them. People had less money to buy them with. Yet a lot of these records became more about, certainly about booze. When Prohibition was shot down, there was a lot of records came out, or a number of records came out that sort of celebrated that.
In 1928 in Atlanta, Herschel Brown and His Boys recorded an example of one of these boozy songs. This one's called Corn Shuckin' Party in Georgia.
Well, here's the rest of the boys. Hello, boy.
Hi, boys. How are you?
Say, boys, you bring your estimates with you?
You bet.
Got it right in.
Now, boys, I got 10 one-gallon kegs of good charted corn liquor hid in that pile of corn. And as we shuck down to this here keg of liquor while we'll drink it. Now, wait a minute. Don't start and grabble that corn all down here hunting for that liquor and get it strewed all over the yard. Now, before we start shucking, suppose we have a little tune. What are you going to play, Centel?
Pass around the bottle and we'll all take a drink.
Hey, Centel.
Yeah.
You come on over here and lay down your violin and come on down here to the back of the barn. I got a keg of good liquor here down there.
Boy, you talking to me now. Let's go.
Well, here it is right here. Here it on this here bunch of farts.
Boy, that sure does look good.
Boy, ain't that pretty looking?
Well, it's got a little bit of a sea shanty sound to it, Nathan, and also a kind of almost a comedic skit aspect to it.
This was a big deal for the labels in the late 1920s and early 30s, the hillbilly skit records. They called them rural dramas. They called them entertaining novelty records. And they started, actually, in 1927 with probably the biggest string band of the era, the Skillet Lickers, who made many, many dozens of records. They were from North Georgia. They had a huge hit with this 14-part thing called a Corn Liquor Still in Georgia. They sold, I think the first installment sold something like 100,000 records or more. This stuff, too, was a way of kind of having a virtual sniff in an era when you could only get away with illegal alcohol. So the fact that most of these records did pretty well was probably because people enjoyed the idea of sort of acting out a little bit against prohibition.
Again, the collection's called Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard. We're in the Play Hard section right now. And you, Nathan, write this about the song we're about to hear. It is, quote, one of the first psychedelic freakouts ever put to record, unquote. This is Memphis 1929. What are you talking about?
I have no idea how Victor Records allowed this thing to be recorded and be released. We have no idea what it sold, but I can't imagine. Either it was a hit, though I imagine it wasn't, or it was just this absolute obscurity that, I mean, thank God it lasted. It has endured till now, because I heard this thing when I first dropped the needle. I couldn't believe my ears. I mean, it really is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. There were a lot of Fox Chase records made in this era, a lot of people sort of doing the hounds and the foxes, but nothing as weird or as intense or really downright as scary as this record.
This is Whit Gaydon and the Tennessee Coon Hunt.
Oh,
is Whit Gaydon. And Tennessee Coon Hunt, recorded September 17th, 1929 in Memphis. Nathan Salzberg has put together this collection, Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard. Hard Time, Good Time, and End Time Music, 1923 to 1936. Can we assume, Nathan, that some sort of liquor was flowing in the recording session that day?
I'd like to, but at the same time, doing some research for the liner notes to this thing, I turned up some information about Whit Gaydon, primarily through his great-granddaughter, and he was actually a sort of a peripatetic poet. He wrote for a little newspaper in Albemarle, North Carolina, and he apparently wrote a poem for all 48 states, though none were ever published. I mean, he was an artist, so I don't know whether he was lit up when he recorded that, or this was just, again, a psychedelic expression.
Yeah, that's really interesting. All right, so let's wrap up with the Pray Hard part of the collection, which you mentioned singing evangelists before. How big a deal was this part of the music world back then?
This was a big part for both white and black music, both hillbilly and what they called race records. Of course, we know the more famous ones come from the race record catalogs, folks like Blind Willie Johnson, Washington Phillips, those sort of folks. But there were some really, really great real artists that were recorded in the late 20s and early 30s that were making evangelical songs, making religious pieces, recording religious pieces for the labels. And they were big sellers, too. I mean, some folks... maybe I imagine some people would only let records into their homes that were of a sacred nature, and the labels definitely capitalized on that. Some of the best were from my home state of Kentucky, a fellow named Ernest Phipps and his Holiness Singers, a fellow named Alfred G. Carnes, who's a famous one. They're on the set.
What about Snowball and Sunshine? This seems like yet another take on this tradition.
It is indeed, and it's kind of an anachronism. I would like to know what was actually thought or said in the recording booth when they made this record. Snowball and Sunshine were a husband and wife blackface team from Atlanta. They were white folks in blackface, and they did a weekly radio broadcast. At least Reverend Snowball did, the husband. His name was James Kimbrough. And he called it his Invisible Church of the Air. And he did sort of a black preacher spoof every week on the radio, and apparently it was popular. And he cut a record for Columbia in the late 1930. It was two parts of a sermon called Moses and the Bull Rush, in which, among other things, Mother Hubbard and Moses get rushed by a bull. So it was purely comic. But then they made this record in early 1931 for Columbia. They did a version of When the Saints Go Marching In. They did a version of Take Your Burden to the Lord and Leave It There. And I imagine that consumers of these records, especially in Atlanta or the South, maybe knew Snowball and Sunshine as being sort of a blackface, you know, parody act. But mm-hmm. I don't hear that in this record at all, or just a very little. You sort of hear Reverend Snowball kind of goading his congregation on with some, you know, a little bit of dialect sort of, you know, stand up now. But the rest of it really sounds authentic to me. It sounds really sincere.
This is Snowball and Sunshine, and Leave It There. There, recorded in Atlanta, 1931, by Snowball and Sunshine, who, as Nathan Salzberg was telling us, were husband and wife blackface parody duo, and that appears on the new set called Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard, Hard Time, Good Time, and End Time Music from 1923 to 1936. Nathan, did this collection tell you something new, add, shine a different light on that time period for you? Listening to these old hillbilly records, early kind of proto-country stuff, you know, is it more of the same stuff that collectors have heard for years, or was there something new, something unexpected here?
For me, this music's always been about the personalities that made it as much as it is about the social contexts or the collective traditions that the artist came from. And putting this thing together, I realized, you know, there were songs, there were great records or good records that would have fit the topics pretty well or to a T that would have been great. But ultimately, I feel like these records are so, all of the ones that we put on the set are really just brimming with personality and with real artistry that I don't think is just sort of, you know, a chip off the collective tradition, say, or the collective repertory. I feel like there's just sort of a rough and raggedness in the music pre-war that just, putting the thing together, it really struck me, and every record has that, and I think that's why I ended up including each one that I did.
There are 42 songs in this three-part set, Work Hard, Play Hard, Pray Hard, which also includes essays by J.J. Sullivan, Amanda Petrusich, and Sarah Bryan, put together by Nathan Salzberg, archivist at the Alan Lomax Archive. And thanks so much for sharing it with us on the program today.
Thanks so much, John. I really appreciate your interest.
This is Soundcheck.
Get behind the hearse.